CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com. Sia, did you hear your song?
I would like to state.
Yes.
That was surprised me, and I had nothing to do with that.
No. You didn't. You didn't put it up on the video. I think either Greg or Spike or one of them did it. So there it is. The Sia Sanguini original. Yes.
Well, the thing was, I just went to the kitchen and I heard it playing. Then I started humming along to it, and I thought, wait. How is this a thing?
That's your song. Remind us of how it all happened.
I wish it did not happen, but okay, here we are now.
Go on.
No. How old is it now? 2 years old?
Easily. Maybe even three.
Okay. Well, that's your Friday blessing. That's what you get.
It's you. It's true. What is it called?
It's you.
a Sanguini original.
It started out on that day.
Yeah.
I never felt this way.
Yes.
I saw you standing there, and I thought, my, you were the one for me. I was the one for you. My life was never the same.
Oh, wow. A Sia Sanguini original, everybody. It's you, it's true. Isn't that great? Just lovely. What a stupid song. Shame, Sia says, Annette, it's not so bad. Oh, please, Annette, you obviously don't have ears. Lenise says, ha, 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 I think it's cool, Sia. Jesus. Luzanne says, what did we do to deserve that audio assault? I agree, my ears are buffering, says Hugo. Another Sia,
I should have thought something was up.
Another Sia says, this is the worst thing to happen to my ears since my ear infection. Sia, my friend, stop singing. Stig says, Jesus, what did we do to deserve that punishment?
It's okay, people. I get it.
Kutlenkosi's just got like laughing emojis. It's hilarious. Okay, so there we go. Some feedback for Sia on his singing. Sia still believes his singing is great, no matter what you say, and he's not going to change that. Not anytime soon.
I will make it through.
All right, a few things to get to today before we speak to Bjorn Heyerdahl, who we'll talk to later on. He's got something called the Midgard Project, which we'll speak about. He's a real life Viking, and he's got a book that he's written. It's a fiction book called The Midgard Expedition, but he actually does make boats, and he has walked and sailed and rowed and paddled and swum across all kinds of biomes on our planet. So he's a real adventurer. And we'll speak to him a little bit later on. I know Leanne has got something interesting to tell us. This is pretty fascinating. RefundMyShitDate.com. So this is an actual site, and I just went to the site just to have a look. It says Refund My Shit Date, the pandemic edition. But I still don't understand what's going on here. Do you want to explain it quickly to us, what the hell this is?
So especially during COVID, you may have had some horrible experiences. For instance, I don't know, maybe you went on a date and you had to wear your mask the whole time, and that doesn't bode well when you're trying to see what the person looks like. So if you had a shitty date during the pandemic,
right,
you can actually go onto the site and share your story on how lockdown restrictions stopped you from having a good date. And you can send your slip to this website, your till slip, and they'll refund you with something else, like an at-home massage. They'll even give you discounted therapy sessions. They'll give you a subscription.
Who are these people? Like, what's in it for them? Why would they refund you having a shit date? I mean, what are they? Is it the Chinese government who's responsible for not containing the coronavirus? Who else would pay for that?
I have no idea. I found the site, all it says is submit your story or you can view stories. And you get given like, you know, Headspace, that app, which is
sure.
for meditation. Yeah. You'll get like a subscription, a free subscription to that. I don't really understand. I'm going to click view stories and see if that brings any light to it.
I think this is so funny that people want to tell the story of their shit date during lockdown. And then, you know, there's someone who's actually prepared to like give you a refund of some kind, a massage or a voucher for somewhere.
Wow.
I mean, that's crazy, right? Some people have too much money and too much time, and they think they're obviously philanthropists of some kind.
So one of the shit dates says, this is number 323. We were at the park. After our picnic, I told her how much I like her, and suddenly she just left for no reason. I paid for fast food and drinks for about 100 euros. I never learned the reason for her action. So Refund My Shit Dates rated that 5 broken hearts in terms of emotional damage and said, you deserve better. Another one, I was talking to a girl on Instagram and we went out 1 or 2 times, but always with my friends because her friends didn't like me. So I decided to talk to her about how I feel and told all my friends not to come. I told her that they would come just to get her to pitch up. We sat for 30 minutes and he called my friends because he didn't want us to be alone. At least an acquaintance of ours passed by and told him to sit with us. I ate the chocolate I got for her on my own. Emotional damage, 4 broken hearts.
Oh my God. That's so crazy. I just can't believe there's a site like this. So we got an interesting email from someone the other day, and it's quite long, so I might just pick and choose what parts of it I get to, because it's from Vince, and he's got 7 or 8 points here. In fact, he's numbered them himself. So I'll just start off with, he's a fan of the show. He's been listening for a long time. He listened to the first hour getting ready for work, and he listens to the second hour in the afternoon. As a result, I don't really have time to WhatsApp or be on the show live. So in other words, Vince will probably only hear this like this afternoon when he's driving back from work. So he said he wanted to write down a couple of thoughts for us. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Last Friday, you guys are talking about the conversation cliches that really annoy you. Gareth mentioned that corporate speak is highly annoying, and I agree. Please check out a website, and he's given me this website for all the corporate speak terms that are so goddamn annoying. So what I'm going to do is save that for next week, and we'll actually go through some of them because they are appalling. And they, you know, the people who talk about, let's take this offline, or I'd just like to put it out there, or let's think outside the box, or this really is a bottom-up organization, not a top-down one, you know, that kind of crap. On collectibles, some 10 years ago, I bought a few 5 rand coins with Mandela's face on them. They're still in original packaging. If you manage to speak to the Scoin guy again, that's Ryle, we will speak to him again, then we'll ask him if you should hang on to those coins or not, Vince, or whether you should just spend it. But I don't think their value would have gone up terribly much. I mean, they still are, you know, what the currency is that's printed on them, which is 5 rand. So they might be in really great condition. A collector might want them. Otherwise, they're just 5 rand coins. So if you put them into circulation, they're not going to be much, much more valuable. But if you keep them for, I don't know, 20 years, then they might be. That's just my top my top line comment on that. But you can wait, and we'll ask Rail when we have him back on the show. Gord is amazing. He goes into a whole thing. What's that?
Top line is very corporate.
It's a very corporate, correct. I've got to put some money in the swear jar now. Because that's just not on. I shouldn't be able to use that kind of bullshit language. He goes on about Gord for a while, loves Gord, can't wait for Gord to write his children's books, which are apparently just around the corner. That's going to be very exciting. He says, a while ago, the One Thing for the Week instructed us how to choose a weapon. And we didn't do One Thing for the Week this week. You've just reminded me. Ugh, I feel like such an idiot. So it'll be 2 things for next week then. I mean, that's the name of the, it's actually called One Thing for the Week, and I couldn't even do one thing for the week. How embarrassing.
You had one job to do.
One job to do. Jesus, that's bad. Sia, please, let's do it on Tuesday next week, and we'll make sure we get back to it.
Okay.
All right. For those people who feel uncomfortable wielding lethal force but still want something between themselves and an attacker, could I suggest they look into getting the Umarex Home Defense Revolver? It launches small nylon balls with unreal power that will stop any intruder. The going price is a reasonable 3,200 Rand, and there's no paperwork required. This country is dangerous. We need to take responsibility for ourselves. So that's called the Umarex, U-M-A-R-E-X, Home Defense Revolver. That sounds like a good thing to have.
I can finally shoot that menacing tree outside my window.
He also says, on a bitter note, Damon has lost the plot, I'm afraid. You took 20 minutes too long to cut him off the other day. He's entertaining to listen to sometimes, but my God, the COVID PR scare campaign has got him good. Please, if he must come back on the show again, I will tune into mainstream radio and listen to the traffic reports and adverts if you two go on about COVID again. I think Damon and I just have to avoid that subject, frankly. He says he's not really thrilled with Pumi, but he says, I understand the move to YouTube has prevented you guys from playing an interlude between the 2 hours of the podcast. May I suggest giving some exposure to local bands who won't mind their songs being played on YouTube? Yeah, we have some recordings even that we put together when we had some local bands in the studio, and maybe we should put those into that break. So, yeah, that's not a bad idea. And he loves Nina Hasty. He loves JJ Cornish. So there's lots of feedback. So thank you, Vince. It's always good to get an email like that. I mean, it took me forever to read it, but it was really good to read. So thank you.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
All right. Just one last bit of feedback for Sia about his song from Vuzimuz, who says, Sia, your song is doo-doo, bro. Yeah. And then...
Oh, shame.
Dude 69 says, I remember that. That's Sia's song. It's you. It's true. That's exactly right. And Home Ideas says, same beat as an Afrikaans treffer. Yes, that's great. That's absolutely
great. I listened to some Afrikaans radio yesterday in my car.
Why? Why did you do that?
I happened to tune into Jacaranda.
Ooh,
and they were celebrating 35 years.
Is it 35 jaarkies? Yeah.
It's exactly what they say.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But it just reminded me of how much I love Afrikaans.
Yeah.
I mean, they were describing how an octopus, but they called it an octopus, which is actually a seerkat, if you didn't know, in Afrikaans, which is so weird because a kat is a puss. They were describing how it was a true or false question for a listener. Do octopuses eat their own limbs when they're bored? And after watching my octopus teacher, I thought that was bullshit.
Yeah.
But apparently they do. And the guy phoned in Johan, he went, "Var, true."
Oh yeah,
and then the host said, "Ek eet sommer my arms want dit lekker proe."
Want dit proe?
And talking about how,
okay.
Yeah,
your Afrikaans has gone to absolute shit over these years, hasn't it?
A little bit, but and then they got talking about how people eat their snot. Oh my God! But anyway, did remind me of how much I like the Afrikaans language. It's just so guttural.
No, it's great. It's got there's some things you could say in Afrikaans that you just it feels so much stronger than if you said it in any.
Yeah, like snot.
Snot, as opposed to snot. Yeah, I agree. There's something about that sound. Yeah. Oh man, no. Listen, I love the language, but I'm impressed with you, Leanne, listening to a bit of Afrikaans radio there. That's very nice.
Yeah, like I said.
Very nice. I see the Bitcoin price is heading up above $54,000 again today, so we'll chat to Sean Sanders next week one more time and find out from him what he can tell us, and hopefully you know, the next couple of months will improve the economy, and those people who have been working hard throughout lockdown will be able to see some fruits of their labor. That would be nice. How about that? Wouldn't that be a nice wish for the rest of the year and make winter a little less cold and miserable? Jesus. I decided yesterday that the 1st of May is usually my electric blanket. The earliest date, I don't allow myself to put an electric blanket or a heater on before the 1st of May, but tomorrow's the 1st, so I'm there. Get on with it now.
Yes, but we also have a little bit of weather coming in.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Oh, here you go, Carl.
What's that, Sia?
Carry on with your weather forecast, Leanne.
So there's snow in the mountains, and... This is apparently the real first day of winter, which is interesting because in Gauteng we don't have rain in winter, but it's being marked by quite heavy rainfalls. I've just had to put a towel in front of my cat flap door because it's coming in.
There's no need to call it that, Leanne. We all know what you're talking about when you talk about your cat flap door.
A grosje Katzenklappe.
Your cat flap.
That's what
door.
It said on the box.
All right. Yeah, I'm sure. That sounds perfectly normal.
That is related. Oh, gosh.
Leanne's cat flap door.
It was so wet, I had to use a towel, a swimming towel.
We could carry on like this. No. We could carry on like this all day. Don't be afraid, Sia. All right. I got another email from someone who loved the discussion last week with the ophthalmologist, Dr. Rob Daniel. The question arose about what vegetables are good for the eyes, and it isn't carrots. Carrots are good for eyesight. That was apparently discussed on QI with Stephen Fry. So listen to this. I love this. I mean, people tell us all this interesting stuff. During World War II, the British had just invented radar, and they wanted to keep it a secret. The Germans, however, couldn't help wondering how the British nighttime bombing raids were so successful. Obviously, they'd found radar and the Germans hadn't discovered that yet. How the British managed to see their targets no matter how dark was a mystery to the Germans. So, to put the Germans off the trail, the British started the rumor that they were feeding their population with lots of carrots, and this improved their eyesight, in particular with night vision. The rumor worked for long enough for radar to be kept secret, and the war was won. However, the myth stuck to this day. Isn't that interesting?
Ah, that's amazing.
So apparently this was on QI with Stephen Fry. So I just loved that story. I thought it was so good. So thanks for that email. Another one is a suggestion for Blind History, which we had a great episode this week on Robert Sobukwe. And I actually got some feedback from someone who said we left out some stuff. And unfortunately... there's just no way we could squeeze everything into that 15 to 20 minute episode. And we try to be a bit more disciplined about not letting it go over 20 minutes because, you know, people's time is valuable. And if you're a fan of Blind History, I would hate for you to have to, you know, waste time listening to a longer podcast than you had expected. We've got to be disciplined about it. So Anthony and I do sometimes leave some stuff out, but obviously, you can go and read up your own stuff. This was more or less about whether or not he was allowed visitors when he moved back to Kimberley with his wife after he was released from jail. And there just wasn't time to cover all of it. But thank you for the feedback as well. We're going to speak in a little while to Bjorn Heyerdahl about his Midgard expedition and also the book that he's just written about it. So we'll talk about that. And if you want to send in questions or you've got anything that you want to comment on this morning, please let us know. We also have George Meany joining us as usual on a Friday morning, just before 8 o'clock.
I have a question for George lined up, and it's similar to the car ramming into News Cafe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was something else I wanted to say, and I've just lost my train of thought.
Leanne.
You're definitely losing it.
Are you having a stroke?
Sure, yeah. It's totally gone. Totally gone.
Sia, you seem to think that a lot of things are a stroke. You know, it's a very specific situation that you could end up in if you have a stroke. It doesn't happen to just anyone, Sia.
Yeah, but it happens commonly enough for it to be a legitimate concern of mine.
Very rare that someone at your age should have a stroke. Yeah.
rare, but it could happen. I once heard someone, and it was actually the, what is she? The national communications manager of the EFF.
Oh, yeah.
She was doing an interview and she had a stroke live on air.
Oh, I love to
and
see
And ever
that.
Since then, it has just. No, you don't. Oh, my gosh. It's
I would love
creepy.
To see
no,
that.
No. It's, she was doing. Gareth, you are into like some weird shit.
No, it's not like I just love seeing a politician suffering. To me, that's always something worthy.
Oh, my Lord.
I have no problem.
No, you just feel so bad for her. I feel bad for her. It was a radio interview.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear her slip into this realm of just not being able to articulate herself, and it's scared me since. I've prayed for a couple of things ever since we started broadcasting remotely, which is I hope I don't die on air, because imagine the trauma of you guys seeing me just collapse dead and you can't do anything about it since you're not here. And then secondly, I've always hoped like I do not see a bug or something crawling
yeah, over the computer screen.
On a wall behind me, and it just jumps on me. That's the thing the internet just...
Oh, my Lord.
So these are just two surprises, Jesus.
The good news is that I remembered what I wanted to say.
Good. Let's go.
I dated a very good-looking, long-haired man, or boy in those days, because I was in varsity, named Thor.
Oh wow!
When I was in varsity, that was all.
That's it.
She's just showing that she did have it. You know, that's all Leanne wants us to know. It's like she once had it. She could get any guy she wanted. Okay. Yeah, I know.
Is it maybe I was born with it?
Bit of a humble brag going on there, Leanne Moll.
Mm. Thanks for letting us know, Leanne. We are now enriched by this.
Yeah.
Good.
Can I raise this up, because some people must probably enjoy seeing this?
Yeah,
because it looks like Ghislaine Maxwell,
yes,
is slowly losing marbles in prison.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I feel so sorry for her. She's such a sympathetic creature. You know, she's someone who deeply deserves our compassion.
Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you a photo that has been released by Ghislaine's lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
Who are saying they are fearful around her sanity.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that first when I saw this, I thought she was part of a gang and this was the effect of a fight. But alas, it is alleged that she is beating herself up.
Oh, take God. Let's take a look. Oh, there's a big bruise. There's a big bruise under her left eye.
It's not too bad. Yeah, and also she's got this weird, like, grin. I think that's what's the most painful.
She's gone. She is absolutely gone. So her lawyers are trying to get a better environment for her while in prison, because they say that she's isolated and that guards only check up on her about every 15 to 30 minutes. But other than that, she's somewhere in the dark. And they said those
just like her victims.
Mission. Yeah, just like her victims, exactly. Somehow I'm not, again, somehow I'm not driven to like a compassionate stance here.
Zero sympathy here for her.
And as of this week, a 3-judge panel, I didn't even know this could ever be a thing, decided to deny her bail. This is yet again after her lawyers were appealing just to have bail for her and they can give up things like her passport just to make sure that she's out of prison in the meantime. But they all decided, nope, she still needs to deserve being inside prison. For
the girl, the women that she harmed through her direct involvement live in their own prison in their heads every day of their life.
Right, Leanne, you
Sorry,
tell her.
Check,
you go ahead.
But you... Yeah.
You remind her that.
Live with it.
You remind her of what she's done. You should be on the prosecution team.
Absolutely. I'm definitely not on the fence on this one.
All right. Well, talk about things that I've been holding on to for a long time, waiting to tell you about. I know you're going to just love this. On Amazon, These guys will apparently deliver these to South Africa. You're very excited about this, I can tell. There's a new invention, and I can only imagine that for some people this is a lifesaver. Here it is. Take a look at this. They're called shittens. So they are...
Are those mittens for shit?
They're mittens for shit. No. That's exactly right. They're called shittens. Mittens for shit.
No.
Yes.
You put them on your hand and then wipe your ass.
Correct. This is if you prefer that to toilet paper, you get a pack of 20 for $37. With shipping and import fees to get to South Africa, it could be about $45.
Oh, do they shit to South Africa?
They shit and ship to South Africa. But there we go. Shittens, the thing you didn't know you needed. And it says,
but that implies that you're using your fingers and getting in deep.
No, you know what a mitten is. A mitten has the piece over the fingers, but then it's just got a thumb. So it's really more like an oven glove. Right.
Yeah, but still.
And so some people might prefer shittens, and they apparently are, here's the description. Let me tell you about these. If there's one great universal truth that we can all agree on, it is this. No one wants to poop on their hands. And yet... we laugh carelessly in the face of danger every time we take an old-fashioned wet wipe to our hinies, flying completely blind in the critical poop-to-hand spatial relation. How many times have you taken one of those substandard wet wipes to the posterior of a child, risking major contamination from that flailing poop cloth? And how many times has your dog's number two been a little closer to a number one and a half, requiring a deadly grab and pull maneuver with whatever's lying around? Enough is enough. With new shittens, you can fully protect your hands. You can fully protect your hands while you tend to the dirty deed. Great for stocking stuffer, gag gift, Christmas gift, Secret Santa, great white elephant gift. Please leave your comments, opinions, and experiences about shittens below.
I think it's a great invention. So ever since they made wet wipes for adults to use, but the thing is, the chances of you missing the cloth and actually coming into skin-to-skin contact when you have a wet wipe are very high.
Well, customer reviews are extremely high. I mean, I'm just looking there, 4.7 stars out of 5, which is incredible. I mean, that's a really good, that's a good rating on Amazon. And they say here that you actually could get 4 uses per mitten, front, side, wear it backwards for another use. Isn't that great?
I was at a friend's house and she had these two, they weren't pugs, similar. They were similar to pugs. And the one had what looked like a thumb length of grass sticking out of its ass.
Oh, no.
And so and they were trying to wipe their butt on the mat. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would save this poor creature by tugging on the grass.
Oh.
And I pulled out the type of length of grass that comes up to your knees that you'd find in the meadow. Oh. And it was caked in shit.
Oh no. Oh, that's horrible.
A shitten would have done the job perfectly.
If you'd
instance.
Had shittens, you would have been fine.
Oh gosh.
Now, is it the same or similar material as a standard mitten? Because that's also a major differentiator.
No, it must be like a wet wipe.
It's like a wet wipe, yeah. It's exactly what it is.
Moist tissue.
You can't flush that down our loos. You can only, you know, you're only supposed to put toilet paper down our loos in South Africa because a lot of people, a lot of the sewage treatment plants in towns or the septic tanks in, you know, the country are not designed to make that stuff, you know, to rot away and kind of become part of
the ecosystem.
Biodegrade is the word I'm looking for.
That's a problem because I don't really want to have a shitten full of shit in my bin for the week.
Yeah, that's something to think about, everybody. So I just thought I'd share it with you. You know, we're always trying to find new inventions that might improve our lives, like the mobile phone or... you know, the ring light or perhaps, a new device for cleaning up shit, a shitten. So there we go.
You can You can clean your ring light with a shitten.
Yes, you could. I'm just looking at it now thinking, yeah, I could clean that with a shitten easily. In fact, you can clean a lot of things. You know, you don't have to use it for what it's meant for. You could use it for cleaning all kinds of things. You know, it's like having a cloth on your hand the whole time. It's great.
I'm thinking of the owner of shittens who has to do a for it similar to what they do on Dragon's Den.
Yes.
So actually to stand up in front of people, because I'm right. sure there must have been yeah. some sort of a what investor pitch or something.
Right.
They had to really why the concept of shitting
yeah.
is so great.
Hi, everybody.
So
hi, dragons. I have an idea, and I'd like an investment of $100,000 in order to launch my new product. And what is it called? Shittens. Sure. Yes. Here's $100,000. Go for it. That's great. But there it is. It's on Amazon. You can buy them if you are interested. Okay. Let's turn our attention to something a lot more interesting than that, and to someone who I think is a lot more interesting than that. How often could you say that you've met an actual real life Viking? Not very often, but today we get an opportunity to do that. His name is Bjørn Heyerdahl, and he is here to talk to us about his fiction book that he's written, which is called The Midgard Expedition. He has actually been on a number of real-life expeditions, too, and so much more. How are you, Bjorn? Nice to see you.
Hi, how are you doing there, Gareth? I'm 53, if you're asking how old I am.
No, I didn't ask how old you were, but that's interesting anyway. I said, how are you, but that's fine. All right, so
a little blur on the mark this side.
No problem.
Usually the opening question.
No, not at all. So tell us, Bjorn. I mean, first of all, I did explain to Leanne and Sia that you are a real Viking. I mean, you've actually got a Norwegian Viking lineage that goes all the way back to 800 AD when the Vikings were raping and pillaging the coasts of Northern Europe. And it's so funny because we talk about Vikings a lot on this show because we've been watching all these mini series, and you know, I'm sure you've seen them too. Everybody loves the Vikings, and they've had a bit of a revival recently. Just tell us about your family history because it's pretty fascinating. Bjorn, can you hear us?
Gary, I missed you for a second there. I did get your last question, which I think is to give you a bit of family background.
Yeah, tell me about your family.
Just wave if I'm coming through clearly.
Yeah.
But yes, my family goes back to 812. The Norwegians and the Vikings are very, very good with their genealogies.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had thick Viking blood for a very long time. So we are connected to the Norwegian Vikings and all the way back to 812, as we said. In more recent times, my grandfather, a very famous explorer, which the older set of your listenership will know as Thor Heyerdahl, of the Kon-Tiki expedition, and then the Ra expedition. So it has come through down the line, and I've spent most of my life in the field of exploration, and not just for the sake of exploration, but it's scientific research and exploration.
Now, that's fascinating. Now, Thor Heyerdahl, I remember he was the guy who launched, as you've already said, the Kon-Tiki expedition, but he was quite internationally renowned. I mean, he was a very famous man, and he kind of changed the way that people thought about seafaring and the way that we thought about history. And he proved a bunch of things that I think probably we hadn't known about for several hundred years that had to be rediscovered. But the whole term Kon-Tiki was invented by him. And these days, obviously, there are people who go on these Kon-Tiki tours and everything else. I mean, tell us if you remember anything about your grandfather, what kind of a guy he was.
Yeah, look, he was an incredible character, and he did. He built a balsa wood raft, the Kon-Tiki, and sailed it from Peru 5,000 sea miles. It took 101 days with a crew of six across the Pacific Ocean to prove that the ancient Peruvians and South Americans could have migrated across that huge expanse of ocean. And he, this came from 10 years earlier, it was in 1947. 2 years after World War. Him and my grandmother had moved to an island to live like romantically like Adam and Eve in the Marquesas Island group in the Pacific, where he heard stories from a one of the surviving cannibal tribe there, a very old man, had told him that his ancestors came across from the Pacific, and that flew in the face of all archaeological research at that time. And he spent the next 10 years researching that. And when all of academia rejected that at the time, he decided to go and prove it. So the Hales are quite hard-headed that way, as you'll know from my son, if you know him. He went and built one and sailed it across the Pacific. And it was, it was extraordinary news. And it was a very good news tale. You know, the Kon-Tiki sold second only to the Bible book in its era.
Wow.
And it just caught the imagination of the world that someone could have that tenacity and have that Viking spirit and go out in the face of all classical archaeology and prove that this could be done. And in recent years, he's been vindicated by genetic tests that those islands were populated by both sides of the island.
It's incredible.
So I knew him well. He died in 2002. I was a pallbearer at his funeral. I got, as an adult, to spend quite a bit of time with him on archaeological sites, particularly the last one he had in Tenerife in Canary Islands, on step pyramid sites there. And compared a lot of them, I learned a lot more about how people live their lives intelligently and sustainably, and how people fed themselves, and how they provided air conditioning, and how they did all their daily activities a little more sustainably than we seem to be doing right now, back in the day, or less so.
Yeah.
He was concerned with the migrations. But he did become quite a global citizen. Him and Mikhail Gorbachev initiated the Green Cross International. He worked with the United Nations and UNESCO chair, and as I do now, with many projects in global leadership and highlighting pollution and all of that.
So I mean, Bjorn, obviously in your blood is this exploration gene. I mean, you guys clearly have something going on there. I mean, you yourself have been in all the biomes, oceans, rivers, mountains, deserts, wetlands, jungles, African bushveld. Over the last 30 years, you've been kind of looking for adventure, and you've seen some incredible things and explored the globe from left to right and up and down. What is for you the driving force and motivation? Because, you know, there are so many things that people say, oh, well, we've seen everything that Earth has to offer. We've explored every corner of the planet. What is it that keeps you interested in that stuff?
There's a number of answers to that, Gareth. One of them, which is the oldest driver of innovation and driver of man, is the need for survival and the need for more. The need to represent the next evolution of humanity. I've never been satisfied with stories, historical or future predictions, as they are told by others based on current scientific exploration and explanation or models. And I've wanted to look at a way that humanity, without being idealistic at all, can fully integrate itself in regenerating the systems that we're part of, that we can behave as what we are, as a high order expression of this entire planet Earth, and that we could learn from it. So when we taking very practical lessons, for example, on cleaning water from a wetland like the St. Lucia Wetlands Park in South Africa, the study of these systems helps us learn how to better process without chemical poisonings and passing all sorts of things. There's very pragmatic stuff that comes from this. But the drive has been internal for me. I don't know what it is. I don't always never see ourselves as Norwegians or South Africans or Kenyans or whatever, wherever we were born, but as global citizens. And having that responsibility, when your perspective takes on and owns as your own identity the entire biosphere, Your work tends to mirror that. So yes, we act locally. I'm sitting on a climate park here in the Eastern Free State at the moment, where we practice generative systems on the plains of the mountains here and food security programs, and we have educational programs at university level and with the junior school in Mawutse, a whole plethora of integrated systems to help elevate.
In order to speak the way you do about things, you have to have traveled a lot. You have to have seen a lot. But I'm interested also in what this book of yours is all about, The Midgard Expedition. Tell me about that, because this is a fiction book, right? But it obviously includes a lot of life experiences and understanding and knowledge and kind of wisdom about what you've learned in your own travels.
Yes, The Midgard Expedition, the book, is a non-fiction work. It is the story of my building a Viking ship using authentic methods here in South Africa, up near the cradle of humankind.
Mm-hmm.
And it documents that story. But the trip we took went through the various biomes and projects. So it talks about the philosophy. It highlights all of the pragmatic.
Oh, I think we've just lost him. He just disappeared. That must be the Free State where he is at the moment with their horrible internet connections. We'll try and get him back in a second. We do have George Meany standing by to join us in a little while as well. But I think, isn't this interesting? I mean, here's B, who says, that Thor Heyerdahl, Bjorn's grandfather, was our hero at school in the days before the Apollo missions. We built mock-ups of the Ra. That was his ship. Sorry, Bjorn, we seem to have lost you for a second there. You're back.
Yes, you did. I'm back again.
We just got this message from somebody who says your grandfather was our hero at school in the days before the Apollo missions. We used to build mock-ups of the Ra. And, I mean, this is just to your point about the Midgard expedition. So you actually built this ship, and you took it to these various places, right?
Yes. We did. We sailed it. We launched it on Hartebeespoort Dam for its flat water trials.
Yeah.
And we were on a game farm up in the cradle of humankind. And we did all the testing there. Then we took it down to Durban for its first ocean trials with a crew of 12 people. And we documented the various biomes. We went through the coastal mangrove systems. We used it as a platform, as quite a literal vessel. In the way it was constructed, completely. I mean, we handmade our own bolts. We crafted it we invented our own tools.
Where
the old ones.
And Bjorn, did you wear helmets with horns on them and fur coats and brandish axes, or did you leave that stuff on the shore?
Yeah, I do. I did have a fur coat, and I always have one with me, especially up here in the Eastern Free State. But the horned helmets are for the children. Of course, Vikings, there is some evidence of the odd Viking having horns on his helmet. But I think they were scary enough with an axe in their hand, let alone a horn on their head.
So I just want to correct something. I did get it wrong. Yeah. I had in the notes here that it's a non-fiction book, so I must just clear that up. And you can find the Midgard Expedition. Just Google it, and you'll see what that's all about. Isn't Midgard Earth? That's where we live now, right? There were the different realms, and Earth is Midgard.
Yes, Midgard is the domain of man. That's why I've named the series of expeditions that's been going since 1997. This is the most recent on. Asgard was the domain of the gods. Mm-hmm. Midgard was the domain of mankind, the area of our responsibility, where we're accountable.
I just love the way you're able to thread all of that history and your love for exploration into the way we should be custodians, better custodians of the earth. Because, you know, we have so many of these environmentalists who they might have good intentions, but they sound a little bit crazy. And, you know, you get these people protesting on the streets in London, these Extinction Rebellion people who don't give the environmentalists a good name. They're basically lunatics. And it's nice to see that there are people who actually have valuable contributions in a pragmatic sense to give to us to improve the way that we treat the world and that the world can treat us. I think that's really important. Is that part of your driving motivation?
Yes, my motivation, although I've been inclined to leave humanity like Heraclitus a few times due to the prevailing insanity, I've really tried to stay engaged at all levels of society, with academia, with the average Joe in the street, with childhood education, with things that take all the muck and mystery and the kind of hippie-ness, if you want, out of this movement towards intelligent life. And that's why I'm the expedition, the search for intelligent life on Earth. Not a way of building integrating institutions that could link us rather than separate us into these us pockets fighting over issues and philosophical issues. I've tried to be a translator between the more radical elements and rejectionists and the capitalists and the politicians, so that we can get something sane out there that actually is impossible.
Well, listen, good luck to you. The Midgard Expedition can be found online, and you can go buy yourself a copy of that, and there is actually a hard copy as well. But Bjorn, lovely to talk to you, and we'll speak to you again soon. I'm sorry that the connection wasn't 100% great this morning, but we got the gist of it, and it was very good to talk to you. We're going to go to George Meany now, see what he has to say. That was Bjorn Heyerdahl. What an interesting guy, huh?
Jeez, yeah.
Where is absolutely.
George? Oh, hi, Georg.
Look at George. He's in. George, what car? What's going on over there? What car is that?
Oh,
look at him. There he is.
Gareth, that is the Porsche Taycan.
Wow, look at that car.
Just like hanging out in your garage.
Just hanging out in my garage.
Damn, not bad, George. Not bad. You continue. Continue to impress us.
This is, Gareth, a full electric version of the Porsche. Mm. And, almost tripped and saw my ass.
that would have been a great video.
It would have been.
Look at
it. It is one beautiful car. Beautiful, beautiful car.
And you said
if you step inside it.
It's fully electric?
Fully electric.
Yeah.
You step inside and switch on the dash.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can see that.
Yes.
Let me try and.
Wow. Fancy.
Damn, that's cool.
Fancy. Uh-huh. It's so cool. Such a cool car. And it goes like a bat out of hell.
That's amazing, George. That's absolutely phenomenal. You know, I do like it. Whenever we come to you on a Friday, there's always something interesting going on. I mean, we're either up in the air in a plane, or we're on the ground where planes are about to take off. We're on a bike, in a car. It's terrific. So tell us what you got for us this week.
Well, Gareth,
he has that.
No, I know. That's.
I've been driving that for 3 days, which is unbelievable. I mean, before we get onto the content itself, I mean, it's got these disc wheels. Oh, I almost tripped again, Leanne. I've got these stupid things in my garage.
What are they?
It tells you, so I don't have to worry about hitting the wall in the back.
Oh.
You drive over them, and they're kind of like a little bit of a speed bump. But anyway, that's all I wanted to tell you. They've got these disc wheels, so you might not be able to see it, but this area here is solid. It's not. There's only the gap. There's only over there and over there. This area here is solid, which creates a much more aerodynamic wheel, which then gets you a little bit more range.
Superb.
That makes sense.
So.
What are the top speeds you can get in that car?
I don't know. I mean, one of the things I'm going to talk to you about today is what the decision that Reynolds has made. But I mean, I haven't tested the top speeds of the car because, first of all, it's not mine. It belongs to Porsche. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't want to get myself in handcuffs in somebody else's car.
No.
Don't want to get myself in handcuffs in my own car, for that matter. But
yeah.
Talking about your previous guest, I decided to make coffee in that mug.
Earth needs you to give a shit. Okay, we got lots of environmental messages coming through strong this morning on the show. I like it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Gareth, so why the color of your car's paint influences your insurance premium. I don't know if you've ever thought about the color of your car's paint.
Indeed.
I have one theory.
Go on.
And that's that if it is a gray or silver car, it is less likely to be seen and maybe more prone to more accidents. Am I right?
Spot on, Leanne. That is exactly the right reason. So darker color cars are less visible, and the data actually proves it. It's not like it's somebody's opinion. Fatalities and accidents, according to King Price Insurance, happen more often in dark color cars than light color cars. And it also shows in the popularity, because 45% of cars sold in South Africa are white. White.
Unlike the population. Why are you so quiet, George?
Because I'm about to tell you about not only the color of the car, the factors that the other factors that affect your premium are the make and model of your car. So a big risk to hijacking is the make and model that you drive, and so insurance premiums would go up. Is it my imagination or is Sia frozen?
He's probably frozen.
He's been frozen for most of the show.
So where you park your car during the day and the night, and your driving experience and your claims history, and then also the visibility of your car on the road. So all those factors play into your insurance premium. So next time you go and buy a car and you want a, you know, a deep purple or something, consider the effect on your insurance premium. And apparently your premium may be affected by up to 10%. Depending on the color of your car.
So, all right.
I had no idea.
So, if it's silver or white, your premium probably comes down. But is there a certain color that is more dangerous? I mean, we talked about dark ones, but is there a particular color that has the highest insurance premiums? When they see that color car, they're like, oh, no, this guy is a problem. We need to charge him more.
Well, I mean, it would be the blacks and the gunmetal grays and those colors that are harder to see.
Okay.
And then Renault. Renault is the second car maker in the world to make a decision to limit its cars to a top speed. Talking about Leanne's question around how fast this car is top speed, limit its cars to 180 kilometers an hour. Mm-hmm. So it seems like this is a trend. Now it started with Volvo.
Volvo's
decision to limit.
That's not, they didn't put a governor on it. They don't allow the car to go faster than that. So in other words, it's manufactured to only go at a maximum of 180.
Well, they electronically limit it. Okay. So, cars are full of software today. And I mean, these cars are probably even easier to limit to 180 k's an hour. Volvo has actually got some research that shows that there's a segment of consumers who want to buy a Volvo, but won't buy a Volvo because the car's speed is limited. Volvo are pressing ahead anyway, and Renault has just made this decision as well to limit the car to 180 k's an hour because data shows that speeds in excess of 180 k's an hour are often linked to fatality statistically.
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I don't think I would have a problem with a car that had been limited in terms of going only 180 kilometers an hour. I think that's probably a good thing. And considering the number of accidents I've been in my life, I definitely should have a car that's, you know, limited.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have a problem with this at all. One of the big reasons for these decisions with Volvo and Renault is not necessarily the fatalities. Well, it is the fatalities in retrospect, but the reason the fatalities exist is because car technology doesn't have the safety features to save you from a high speed crash.
Right.
So low speed crashes, 80 k's an hour, 100 k's an hour, the car's airbags and driver aid systems are more equipped to save your life than at high speed. Those things inside the car that like airbags become less effective at higher speeds, and that's their reasoning. It's less about the speed and more about the fatalities because technology just hasn't kept up.
Here's an interesting point on your color thing. Ruth says that she's heard red is apparently not visible at certain times of the day. Lots of red cars get into accidents. that might be true or might not be true. And Tracy says her mother has a theory that birds love aiming and shitting on blue cars.
Based on what, Tracy?
We like these theories.
Got to be an India miner.
Greg wants to know, George, the acceleration of that Porsche behind you. Can you tell us anything about that?
So, so there's a couple of variations of this Porsche. This is the Taycan base model with an extended battery, which is not the slowest version, but it's also not the fastest version. So, you know, the slowest version, you're going to get under 5 seconds acceleration. So 0 to 100 in about probably 4.8, 4.9 seconds. Mm-hmm. And the Taycan Turbo does 0 to 100 in under 3 seconds.
Sure.
So, it is exactly 2.8 seconds, 0 to 100.
Wow.
You know, which is unbelievable. It's almost superbike type speeds. But even when you drive this thing, I've been driving this thing now for a couple of days, and the acceleration is one thing, but the immediate torque, you've driven electric cars, Gav, the immediate torque is just something else. You can't believe the effect on your body.
Amazing. Amazing.
It's like the talk of the town, bro.
Question: what is,
you know, Leanne? I give you a compliment last week, and this week you come at me with all this bullshit.
What did you say, Sia?
Question: what is torque, and how, and it's immediate? So what is that?
So, firstly, Sia, it's spelled T O R Q U E.
Yes, that I know. Okay, that I know.
So the definition of torque is it's the power that the car delivers onto the road, but the actual definition is the force that causes the rotation. So the force that causes you to move forward. So have you ever heard of G-force, Sia?
Yeah.
Gravity.
Okay. So torque is a turning motion. Cars, the wheels turn. So it's the torque effect that gets you to move forward. That's really the best way to explain it in relation to a car.
And it's the torque of the town, yeah?
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Anything else, George?
I'll clarify. So thanks for answering, George.
Yes. So very finally, Gareth, UK government is the first country to give a green light to self-driving or autonomous cars on their motorways. So they're busy relooking their laws, and they are going to be putting together what they're calling the country's highway code for the safe use of self-driving vehicle systems, starting with autonomous lane keeping systems, which use sensors and software to keep the car in the lane. This car has lane keeping technology, like the Volvo I had a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. So when you drive and there are lines, I mean, in many places in South Africa, there are no lines, but where there are lines, the car actually keeps itself in the lane. So the UK is the first one that is starting to change their regulation, which I think is a good sign.
I love it.
That's amazing.
Well,
and then George, I had a question.
I believe so.
So you put your key in your ignition and you turn it once and you turn it a little bit the first time, a little bit the second time, and then the third time it starts, right?
Well, that depends. You know, in modern cars, you don't stick the key in anywhere.
No, I'm talking about my car. Okay. So what is the position called before it actually starts, where you've just got it on and the lights come on and the aircon comes on?
Well, technically, the acronym, I'd have to look it up, to be honest, but it says ACC. I don't know if you've ever seen ACC. On that position of the key turn. As a matter of fact, let's Google it. ACC.
So that wasn't
on.
That wasn't my full question.
Oh, okay.
Well, what is your
question? So I had my car.
So it's called, it stands for accessories. So you're switching the accessories on.
Get on with it, Leanne. Okay. What's your fucking question?
While my car was in accessories mode, now I can ask the question properly. yesterday, I was bringing my mom home from her psychologist appointment, and I was busy in the boot, right? I was putting the wheelchair in the boot. I was nowhere near the front of the car, and the car started itself.
No.
And launched forward towards the office of the psychologist. I mean, of all the doctor's offices that you would want to drive into, the psychologist would not be the one, right?
And there was nobody in the driver's seat.
There was no one in the driver's seat. I thought, did my mom fall over and knock over the key? I just didn't know. But yeah, that happened.
My God.
How weird, right?
It sounds
that shouldn't happen.
It doesn't sound like it's the car's fault. That sounds like a Leanne Moll situation that could only happen to you. These weird things that only happen to you.
Jesus. Well, it happened. And now I'm second guessing myself. Sometimes I get into my car and turn on the accessories. Hmm. And then I've remembered I've left something inside. Go inside. I mean, my parking's on a high level. The car could just fall off the edge of the cliff.
Well, don't switch.
Oh, no.
Don't switch your car on then. You've learned something. This is very scary. Now, the rest of us can benefit from it. So I'm sorry that I thought your question was stupid, but that's actually a good one.
There we go.
Well, Leanne, this is what you must know about an ignition. It's the remix to ignition. Mama straight out of the kitchen. Mm. Mama rolling the body. Got every man in here wishing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sia, for the ghetto slang.
That's very good. All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a happy day and have a happy weekend. And we will see you on Monday morning at 6 o'clock. CliffCentral.com.